This is the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. I do two podcasts, this one on the Middle East and another on mainstream American politics. Thank you for listening to this podcast where we talk about issues in the Middle East, Palestine, Israel, and American policies. You can get more information on all of my podcasts by visiting www.hanania.com.
It's Friday, December 13, 2019. I'm Ray Hanania, special U.S. correspondent for the Arab News newspaper based in Chicago. And you're listening to the Arab Street Radio and podcast broadcast from Detroit, Michigan through 690 AM WNZK Radio. Again, I want to do a shout out to Crystal Mayo. I love her morning show and all the great music she plays just before our show. The Arab Street Radio and Podcast is part of the U.S. Arab Radio Network hosted by Leila El Husseini in an effort to energize and empower Arab Americans to stand up for their rights. For more information, you can go to my website at hanania.com, and afterwards you can get the podcast on iTunes or Spotify or by visiting my podcast website at thearabstreet.org. If you go to Hanania.com, I think all the links are there to everything that I do because I'm all over the place. I never rest. I'm working like 48 hours in a 24-hour day. That's all I do. The radio show call-in number is 248-557-3300, 248-557-3300. Some of the topics we're going to talk about, we're just going to take calls from listeners. Israel has new elections. This is the third time. Has a lot to do with Netanyahu being indicted, and slowly as they try each new election and fail to form a government, Netanyahu's dynasty is collapsing, which is good news. Trump, you know, the crazy man that he is, wants to make criticism of Israel anti-Semitic and a federal civil rights crime on college campuses. And the reason he's doing it, obviously, is he's trying to court American Jewish voters. But, of course, American Jewish voters are not happy with him, and they've been criticizing his policies. He's very popular in Israel, but he's not popular here in the United States with American Jews. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. He thinks by pandering, again, this is the way American politics is when it comes to the Middle East. It's easier to pander than it is to do the right thing. And Trump, you know, he's crazy. You know, he's turned the game board upside down. I think he's done a great job of destroying the Republican Party, of exposing the hypocrisies of the Democrats, which is why when I had to choose between Hillary Clinton or him, I figured the best thing to do is pull the wraps off of the hypocrisy, vote for Trump, let him tear the system down, and I think that's what he's doing. And then, of course, we have Rashida Tlaib, who says the two-state solution is dead. She claims it was killed by Netanyahu in Israel. Of course, I say it was killed by her, Rashida, and her extremist buddies. I'm glad that there's a Palestinian in Congress, but I have to be honest with you. There has never been one that has been satisfactory. We have Justin Amash, who's a Republican from Western Michigan. And what does he do? He doesn't talk about the Middle East. He doesn't care. In fact, I wonder if he's really Palestinian. He claims he is. And he did so in a response on Twitter to some people that criticized him. But yeah, you're not Palestinian if you don't stand up and talk about Arab rights when you're in Congress. And then there was John Sununu, who was half Lebanese and half Palestinian. Justin Amash, by the way, is half Palestinian. But, you know, once you're Palestinian, you're all Palestinian, as far as I'm concerned. And John Sununu was the same way. John E. Sununu, the son of John Sununu, the governor. Those guys, they never really cared about their Middle East heritage. They didn't care about being Palestinian. And now we have Rashida Tlaib, who has taken Palestinian identity to an extreme in Congress, which is very cool. There is nothing better than to see Palestinian embroidery, pro-Palestinian speech in the Congress. The problem with Rashida, of course, is she's an extremist. Her friends and buddies are extremists in the community. They silence the moderates. They're against peace. They take the, I think that it's because of people like Rashida that the BDS movement is in trouble and exposed to people like Donald Trump, who is trying to make it a civil rights crime to criticize Israel, calling it anti-Semitism, because they're emotional and extremist. They pander to their emotions and your emotions. There's no real strategic thought that goes behind what Rashida does. Now, that's a tough thing to say because she's the only Palestinian in Congress of any substance, Justin Amash. He's a phony. You know, he was a Republican. He criticized Trump. Now he's an independent, blah, blah, blah. What has he ever done? I've reached out to him to talk to him. But again, you know what? Palestinians are the most angry people that I know. And I'm Palestinian, okay? I've been dealing with my own community for over six decades. I know what it's like. We're angry. And if you say something they don't like, if it's not 100%, they go berserk. They go off the deep end. It's not everybody. The majority of Palestinians go silent. You know, they kind of go into their little cubbyhole in anger and pout. But then there's a small group of fanatics and extremists who take every word. And if you're not 100% the way they are, they go berserk off the deep end. And then they focus more of their energies criticizing you than they do on standing up for Palestinian rights against Israelis. I think that's Rashida Tlaib's problem. And I think she's going to have a problem when she runs for re-election in 2020 in her district, which is predominantly African-American. And I really wonder, will African-American voters identify with her extremist approach to the just Palestinian cause? Because remember, when I criticize Rashida, I'm not criticizing the Palestinian cause. Anybody can embrace the Palestinian cause. And some people can embrace it destructively. And I think that's what Rashida Tlaib is doing. So we can talk about those things. We can talk about anything you want at 248-557-3300. 248-557-3300. We've also reached out to our buddy, Ali Yunus, who is in the Middle East. He writes for Al Jazeera. We'll get him on. And I write for the Arab News. Between us, we kind of bring a balance to some of the topics. Maybe we can kind of hash some of this stuff out. Again, our number is 248-557-3300. If you want to call in and share your views, we're more than happy to do that. I mean, one of the things with Rashida was that, you know, the Democratic-controlled U.S. House of Representatives last week adopted a resolution that supports the two-state solution as a basis for peace between Israel and Palestine. The reason they did that was because Trump, this is what Trump has done for the Arabs. This is what he's done, okay? He has forced us to try to come together. And it's so much against our nature, though, that we are resisting, but we are slowly coming together, both sides. The extremists, the moderates like me, Mr. Moderate, I love to say so. He is forcing us, and he's forcing the Arab world to take a stand, to do something with his crazy political statements. Now, in all honesty, most of his political statements are pretty stupid, okay? I know that they make the Israelis happy, the right wing, not the left, but the right wing, and he's pandering, and he says this stuff because he's trying to reinforce his vote. He's not really smart, believe me. But he does these things. I'll give you a good example. You know, claiming that Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel and that it always has been. Well, the truth is, Israel has been occupying Jerusalem. I don't know if anybody has noticed since 1967. And they've annexed all that property around Jerusalem, and they've made it the capital of Israel, even if it hasn't been stated. So what did Trump do? He stated the obvious. And the problem is we go, oh my God, he stated that Israel, that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and that's a bad thing. And I'm thinking, what's new? What's different? What are we doing? And you know what? It did anger the Arabs, the moderates and the extremists. And that's a good thing because for the last, I don't know how many years, since 1967, I don't even take a guess, 40, 50 years, whatever, it's not even worth keeping count anymore because time doesn't matter. It's the now. What's happening today? For all those years, the Arabs have done nothing to stop Israel from making Jerusalem the capital of Israel. They've done nothing. And that's the Arab activists who talk and scream and yell They are governments who say one thing publicly and do something else behind our backs. And the United States, both sides, not just the Republicans who pander to the anti-Arab vote, but to the Democrats who pretend that they care about the Arab vote, but really they want your vote. They want to walk the line, but when it really comes down to it, they'll stab the Arabs and the Palestinians in the back, which is what President Obama, Bill Clinton, you know, all of them have done. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democratic. So that's the reality of Trump. What Trump has done is he has forced the Arabs to wake up. And it takes a crazy president like Donald Trump to make that happen. It's the only way we're going to see it. He does extremist crazy things like declaring that the Golan Heights, you know, is Israeli. Well, since 1967, the Golan Heights has been Israeli. What's new? What did Trump do that has changed anything? He hasn't done anything. What he's done is he's exposed the hypocrisy of the Arab world, who has done nothing about the Golan Heights. Nothing. They don't care about Palestine. And the activists, they don't care about Palestine either. What they care about is their own existence. It's a job to them. And when they have peace, when we ever have peace, they're going to lose their jobs, the extremists. They'll have nothing to scream about. And that's what's at stake for them. So they don't want, like Rashida Tlaib, when in Congress, when they introduced the resolution for the first time, all these members of Congress voted to support, mainly Democrats, not all the Democrats, of course, because there are a lot of Democrats who are crazy and hateful and probably violate civil rights all the time. When they introduced this resolution saying that the two-state solution and peace between Palestine and Israel was the goal, Rashida Tlaib voted against that. They didn't use the word occupation, which was wrong, but they've been doing that now for years. But instead of supporting the two-state solution and saying that's the way we should go, she said, no, the two-state solution is bad. I oppose that resolution. Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar, all the other part of the squad that they call it, they also voted against it, but not because of the two-state solution. They support the two-state solution. Of course, they're not Arab. They're not Palestinian. Only a Palestinian in Congress would crazily say that they don't support the two-state solution. The two-state solution is the only realistic way to bring about peace and recognition for the Palestinians. The longer we sit there and reject it, and the less that we fight to make it happen, the more likely nothing will happen. This limbo that we're in, we're going to stay in. I'm Ray Hanania. You are listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast here at WNZK 690 AM Radio. Our number is 248-557-3300. You can give us a buzz. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we can take some phone calls, or I'll educate you about what the real problems are in the Middle East. And I don't mind doing it because I've been covering the Middle East since the 1960s, bolstered by people like Ibrahim Abulughad, who is the professor of politics and one of the chief advisors to the PLO back in the 60s and 70s, who helped mentor me to not go into medicine as a career, not to be a doctor like a lot of my relatives, and instead become a journalist. And I've done very well in journalism, but I wonder sometimes, you know, being Palestinian, maybe I should have been a doctor, because there's no hope in the Palestinian community to overcome the crazy extremists and emotion-driven people, the small group that bully the moderates and the smart people into silence. Ray Hanania, we're going to be right back right after these messages. And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania, broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan, through 690 AM WNZK Radio, live on radio and also live online. You can hear us any place in the world. You go to our website at hanania.com. You can get the links there to the live radio broadcast, and then you can call in at 248-557-3300. That one of the links is arabradio.us/live. It's that simple. Anytime you're outside of the radio area, you can listen to WNZK on several tunein.com/radio/WNZK-690 radio. You can hear all the broadcasts and all the great programs that they have on their station, and I'm proud to be there to support Leila El-Husseini, who I think does a great job of expanding our dialogue. Let's go to our friend Jerry Haba, one of our big dedicated listeners out there in Detroit land, greater Detroit. Hey, Jerry, how are you doing?
Good morning, Dr. Ray Hanania.
You think I should have been a doctor instead of a crazy, voice in a crazy Arab community?
Right, you could be both of them. You are a doctor in politics.
I'm a troublemaker in politics. The Arabs don't get me. They go, why do I cause trouble? Why do you cause trouble? Why don't you just be nice? Why don't you just go along with
because
the flow?
Because you said the truth. That's why they don't like you, because you said the truth, right?
Yes, exactly.
You are not hypocrites, right? You say it the way it is. You see, the real journalist, right, is the person who give the public a view on the street, and he doesn't have to be a part of that view, but he just, like a mirror, reflect the reality of the street to the public, to the listener, to the people. And that's what Ray Hanania doing.
And why is the Arab community so sleepy? Why are they so ineffective? You know, I'm always wondering, you know, I've wasted a lot of time. Sometimes I think I've wasted time. You know, I could have been a doctor, but instead, you know, I got into journalism. I've told my stories many times why I did that. But getting into journalism, I wanted to help the Arabs and the Palestinians, not just Palestinians, but Arabs, because Americans look at you and me. They don't know the difference between a Palestinian, you know, or anything. You're a Syrian or, a Chaldean.
No.
You can't tell the difference. So we're all the same. Yet we're the only ones who look at ourselves and say we're different.
We are exactly right. We all have that olive skin. And even, Ray, you remember during the Gulf War, some of the Sikh Indian, they were mistaken.
Yes.
Like they are Arab. And,
yes.
they,
and they were killed.
Two or three members of the Sikh Indian, because mistaken of, they are Middle Eastern, and they were not.
The Pakistanis, so there were a couple Pakistanis that were killed.
Right, what you say earlier about Jansen Uno, Justin Amash, now Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, absolutely, I do agree with you, right? Ray, I have an American friend. First, he told me when Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar become Congress and they were sworn in, he said, Jerry, I hate to say that to you. We were happy to see some of your people first time become Congress people. But look what Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, the minute they were sworn in the office for the Congress, right away they tried to impeach our president. Why? Why, Jerry, did we vote for them just to impeach the president? You see, that kind of hurt us, you know, as an American from this society. They say, look, Jerry, your people, they're after our president to impeach him.
And you got to explain, you have to explain to Americans who might be listening that the Christian Arabs, the majority of Christian Arabs, voted for Donald Trump. You know, the Muslim Arabs were divided, but many, the very conservative Muslim Arabs, not politically, but religiously, they also voted for Trump. They supported Trump because he comes from the Republican Party. He was a Democrat, but he switched. He's over at the Republican conservative side. But the Christian Arabs voted for Trump. We knew Hillary was a phony. We weren't going to support her. But some of our community, they don't vote by logic. They vote by what they think is, you know, of their emotion. You know, so they get angry with somebody, so they vote for somebody.
Right, absolutely. Excuse me to say that. Right, I'll be very honest with you. At the beginning, I voted for Senator Bernie Sanders.
So did I.
You
so
won.
Did I.
And see, right, you or me, we don't have no prejudice. And we know Bernie Sanders, he's a Jewish American.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what religion he is.
Yes.
It could be Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Hindu. We vote for him as a person. And there was a lot of college, university students and youth. They were supported him. But when he sold his soul for Hillary Clinton, that was it.
Yes.
And that's why I voted for Donald Trump, to be honest with you.
Yes, I agree. Hillary Clinton took over and hijacked the Democratic Party in that election because she's a liar and a cheater, and she's a phony. And I wasn't going to support her. And I thought, okay, who am I going to vote for? A liar, a cheater, and a phony, Hillary Clinton, or some guy named Donald Trump,
right?
Who's unpredictable.
She's still a troublemaker?
Yes.
She's a rat.
Is. She's entitled. She has that arrogance where she thinks she deserves everything. You know, that's the way the Clintons have always been. And you know what? Bill Clinton did more. He did more to start the Middle East peace process. But when it didn't go his way, he did more to damage it and to undermine the Palestinians. And that's what they don't get. They don't care. You know, that I don't understand our community, the Arabs, and people from the Middle East.
Excuse me. Yes, Mr. Ray Hananiah, do you remember when Hillary Clinton was first lady and when she visited the Holy Land, Israel and Palestine? And you remember when she met with Palestinian leader's wife, First Lady Suha Arafat? And I believe the reporter, when they asked Hillary Clinton, so what do you think about the Palestine? She said, I told and I promised Ms. Suha Arafat will be solution for the two states, Israel and Palestine. And right, what happened after that? It was just a talk.
It was always talk.
Even
happy talk, I call it.
Right. Even when Hillary Clinton becomes senator for New York,
yeah,
and then she becomes Secretary of the State, what she did to the Palestinian people, nothing.
She did nothing.
Nothing,
absolutely.
Right. Nothing.
That's why I lit the fuse of Donald Trump. He's an explosion in American politics. He's believe me when I tell you, Donald Trump, the one thing that we'll credit him with was turning this corrupt political system that's, when it comes to the Middle East, that's racist against Arabs and Muslims, that's racist against Chaldeans, that's racist against Palestinians. This political system is against us, not Republican, not Democrat, the whole system. And he blew it up. And that's why the Democrats are angry, the Republicans are angry. But I'm going to tell you, we'll have a new world after this election. I'm not sure Trump is going to win. I think he's the lead candidate. I think maybe Mike Bloomberg might actually take the election from Trump. Bloomberg is a smart guy, and he has 34, or I don't know, maybe $54 billion in assets. He's spending $34 million just on TV commercials. Have you seen his commercials? What do you think of him?
That's right. Right, to be honest with you, the way he appeared, Michael Bloomberg, like he jumped from nowhere. Believe me, I do believe he tried to stand his foot, and what he said, I believe he's honest about it. You know, right?
He might take it.
Mr. Senator Harris. Harris, she said she dropped from the race. She said, I don't have the millions or the billion of dollars like Mike Bloomberg. But then, right, the sad things about Ms. Harris, right away, she blamed the fault from the race. It's a racist.
Yeah.
They didn't support me because I'm a black candidate.
Yeah.
Right? This is wrong.
That's ridiculous, wrong, too. Right? You're right. You're right.
Some people, they voted for first American president Barack Hussein Obama.
Who was black,
and he
right.
was a minority.
Yeah.
And he became a president not one term, but two terms, right? Exactly, right, Ray?
Yeah.
Two terms.
Absolutely.
So, come on, Ms.
You should give up this racism stuff. Yes. There's some, but it's not the way it's being portrayed.
But Mr. Ray, I want to ask you a question. What do you think? Don't you think that was a circus yesterday, 14 hours? The Democrats, they closed the session yesterday Mr. Jerry Nadler.
Yeah, Jerry Nadler is one of the Jerry Nadler is one of the most anti-Arab members of the Congress, and to see Arabs rallying around him, I'm like thinking, are you people crazy? Are you drunk with emotion? Jerry Nadler has done more to hurt the Arab and Muslim cause in this country than anybody. And what he's doing is he's promoting himself politically. I'll tell you, this impeachment, all it's going to do is empower Trump to win re-election. Trump is a stronger candidate because of the impeachment. Not because of Trump. Not because he's smart. But because of the people that hate him. They've made him into a candidate, and nobody's looking at Trump and what he does to assess him. They're looking at the hate that comes from people like Nadler and Nancy Pelosi. She's stuck. She has no choice. She has to go along with this. They're going to probably pass impeachment, you know, of President Trump, but all it's going to do is guarantee his reelection, make it very hard for anybody, even Mike Bloomberg, to beat him.
Yeah. Mr. Ray, do you see lately Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, of Adam Schiff or Jerry Nadler? Believe me, they look like a clowns.
Yes, they are. It's just stupid. It really is.
She's not normal. Nancy Pelosi, she's not normal.
No, they can't control themselves.
On the line to be President, Speaker of the House, if and God forbid something happened to our President or Vice President, is Nancy Pelosi, she'll be the President?
Yeah, listen, this impeachment...
She's not normal, right? She's not normal.
No, she's not. She has... God, she could be, America, but the party won't allow her to be.
Impeachment is a disaster, Ray.
Yes.
What Democrat doing to this President is a disaster. And remember, Ray, 3 years ago, they were trying and planning to impeach the president. It's not about Ukraine. It's not about the telephone call. They just tried to get rid of this president. They know he gonna win for the second term. And they don't have a strong candidate. Democrat, all those 22, whatever, you know, there is no such a one strong. They don't have no agenda. Don't you think, right?
Yeah. They don't. Listen.
They don't have an agenda. And Michael Bloomberg, he is a strong, but right still, I would love to see a president, the current president, Donald J. Trump, to serve the second term, because I believe he was good for all of us. You know, when he defended the anti-Semitic against Jewish, right? It could be tomorrow against the Arab, against Christian, against Catholic, against a Hindu. So he tried to protect all the citizens of the United States, no matter who they are. He tried to protect us, and I believe he's the right commander-in-chief, and God bless our president, God bless the United States of America, and hopefully this president will put peace back to the Middle East and will make the Arab proud to be Arab.
Yeah. Listen, Jerry, thank you for calling, okay? We gotta say.
Take my call, Ray.
That's
if I
right.
don't have a chance to wish you Merry Christmas, I want to wish you a happy and a blessing Merry Christmas to you, Ray,
your
family, to all the Arab and Chaldean communities, to America, to the Middle East, all over the world. Peace on earth. Merry Christmas, Ray,
right,
and God bless you, and God bless. Leila Al-Husseini, the founder of this Arab radio show,
right.
And thanks to magnificent producer, Mr. Mike Shepard.
All right, Jerry. Listen, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you later. Yes, it is December 13th, Friday the 13th, by the way, which isn't always bad luck. I'm Ray Hanania, the special U.S. correspondent for the Arab News newspaper. You're listening to the Arab Street Radio and podcast broadcast from Detroit, Michigan through 690 AM WNZK. I'm actually in Chicago. And thanks to the magic of the internet, I can hook into WNZK and bring this radio show to you where you can express your opinion, even if we don't agree. We don't have to agree. We should have a discussion, and it should be respectful. And you know, a lot of times people, they may not agree, then they attack the person saying stuff like the extremists do. These extremists can't justify their position. the one-state solution. All they can do is attack anybody who says it's wrong, like I do. There's no such thing as one state. It's never going to happen. Our number, 248-557-3300. You're listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. We're going to take a break, and we will be right back right after these messages. And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania, and our number is 248-557-3300. I want to welcome a good friend of mine, Ali Yunus, a journalist, correspondent for Al Jazeera English, based in Doha, Qatar. He's a great journalist. I love reading all his stuff. Ali, welcome to the radio show, and thanks for taking the time to join us.
No problem. I just saw your message, and I'm glad to be on.
Yeah, no, I know. I was thinking maybe we can talk about the Israeli elections, Rashida Tlaib's vote against the two-state solution, even Trump's, he's crazy. He does crazy stuff. He wants to make criticism of Israel anti-Semitic and a federal civil rights crime. And what are the Arabs doing about it? Anything?
Well, I just want to let you know that I was in Gaza last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You did tell me that.
I went to... Yeah, I did sign.
Let's talk about them. How are the people in Gaza doing, first off? What's happening to the Palestinians there?
Gaza, actually, the best place that I've ever been to. The people of Gaza are very good people, very nice people, despite being squeezed and under siege
by the Israelis.
And Israel on the other side. But it has a beautiful sea. Gaza has very steep poverty level, people in refugee camps, and people are barely making ends meet. But there is some small middle class and some smaller, richer people, old money families there in Gaza. So you find rich malls, but also you find very poor people there. But overall, I was impressed by how they are, withstanding the pressure on both sides. And I've written a story on the latest, last November, Israeli bombed and killed Islamic Jihad operative there. But also they bombed a family there, killing the father and the mother and several children and the father's brother, claiming that this guy was a jihad operative. When I went there, it turned out there's some Bedouin family living in shacks. Okay, asbestos still exists in Gaza, and corrugated steel rooftops, and blew those shacks where the large family live in into smithereen, killing many, many children. So I've written on the surviving children, a story about them and how they are holding up. Very, very, very sad story, and also written on the latest. The difference between jihad and Islamic Jihad and Hamas, and why Hamas stayed out of the fighting. So I spoke to several people there, and I have another story coming up on how the Gaza people, if they want to travel to Egypt, they have to pay a lot of money to the Egyptians, Egyptian military, sort of like a bribe or an extortion, in my opinion, if you ask me.
Yeah,
but
that's terrible.
Quasi legal channel,
Yeah. Listen, I know that the Israelis use Gaza as a political weapon to whip up the right wing, Netanyahu. Whenever he needs support, they just attack, and they make it look like Gaza, the Palestinians, attacked Israel with missiles. But the truth is that Netanyahu ordered the killing of a Palestinian in Gaza that they claimed. There's never any, court or legal justification. They just kill somebody and they say, oh, he's a terrorist, leader of Islamic Jihad. And then the Palestinians respond, and then they point to that and they say, look how the Palestinians are attacking us. I mean, it's a very sad situation. They've been abandoned by the entire Arab world. They've been abandoned by the justice system in this world. And it's good to hear, though, that they're strong, despite all of the oppression that they go through.
They are strong. They're very generous people. But, just to talk about your point, if Israel go ahead and kill an operative of either of the Palestinian military groups, but they kill a lot of civilians in the process as well.
Yeah, they don't care, and that's true. True.
Yeah, they got a lot of children, a lot of civilians who are innocent. They have no clue. And Gaza is very condensed, space is 300 50 square kilometer. It just makes me feel smaller than Cook County, Illinois, I think, or smaller, you know. So, and people are squeezed and under siege. They cannot go through Israel and to go through Egypt. They can go through Israel and very trickle, you know, maybe like business people.
I have a friend in Gaza. I have a friend in Gaza, Mohammed Murai, who may be listening to the radio show. All he wants to do is document the environment, you know, of Palestine. And he can't, there's no normal life for people in Gaza. You know, he's a photographer. He just wants to take pictures of, you know, the environment, the animal life, the plant life, the, you know, the nature out there. And he can't do that because there's no income, there's no revenue, there are very few jobs. How are people surviving in Gaza?
Well, they have, Qatar, for example. I'm not saying that just because I work.
No, I know that. They've helped.
You know, I've written a story on this before. They spend, and it's public information. I'm not trying to secret. They spend millions of dollars a month in Gaza and on charitable organizations, but also giving $100 to 70,000 poor families. You know, $10 million a month,
right.
And they pay $10 million a month to buy fuel from Israel, so they could then fuel up the Gaza electrical stations to give electricity. And even when I was there, electricity is always sporadic and always goes off and on. Internet is always off and on. And I was in a hotel. It was a good hotel, you know, under the circumstances. And, you know, whatever donations come from the outside world, and there's a, you know, the Palestinian people are, you know, they're resilient, I should say. They're resilient. I could see that. They work hard, they work harder. They try to make it. Even refugee camps, I went to refugee camps, I saw 12-year-old boys. But sadly, a lot of them not in school. They quit school because they want to help their families survive. They clean fish, you know, in the refugee camps. I'm a fish cleaner. I charge 10 shekel or maybe a shekel by pound, which is maybe 10 cents a pound or something like that.
Right.
Or maybe 20, a quarter a pound. So, you know, everybody tried to work, everybody tried to make ends meet, and they're surviving on, you know, on whatever comes up to them. So, it was a short week, and I spent there, but it was a good experience to see, you know, the suffering of the people firsthand and to see the goodness of the people firsthand. So next time I report on Gaza, like I've always reported on Gaza, now I know that I've been there, I've seen its people, I've seen how they eat and see how they travel. Overall, you know, it was a good experience, and I encourage you as a journalist to go, because only journalists...
I've actually been there three times. I met the journalist in Gaza on Wahda Street at that restaurant right at the entrance at Wahda Street. Wahda. And you know, and then I spent time touring Gaza. And I'll tell you what, it is remarkable how the people, the Palestinian people in Gaza can survive one of the worst, most oppressive assaults of any people in the world, to be targeted the way they are by the Israelis, who have super high tech, you know, assault machines, you know, and war machines. They can pinpoint, you know, an attack. And yet, when we hear about, you know, Palestinian children being killed in these attacks, I wonder, it sounds like it's intentional that they're trying not just to kill people, but they want to hurt people, you know, to undermine their spirit, because the Gaza Palestinians have real strong spirit. They're not going to surrender to Israel, but killing children, I think, is intended to hurt them. Do you think it's intentional that the Israelis target these civilian targets? I think it is.
You know, to be honest with you, I cannot say for certainty that they intentionally, but I think they're careless about it. I don't think that they
don't care, in other words.
Okay. Yeah, they don't care. Like,
yeah, but example, that means it's intentional. When you don't care about something and you know that children could be killed, you know, you're still morally and legally responsible for killing kids. Like that Razan El-Najjar, that nurse who's helping people.
Yeah.
A sniper, an Israeli soldier, targeted her, the back of her head, and shot her. You know what I mean? What was she doing? She was providing medical aid. That's intentional, isn't it? It's like, and we can't seem to get the world's, well, we can get the world's sympathy, but no sympathy from the United States.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Biden and a lot of U.S. politicians running for Congress or running for presidents as well, you know, they blame the Palestinians all the time. So, you know, right. Israel has a right to respond. Yeah, Israel has a right to respond, but the Palestinians have to do just sit down and, you know, waiting for the rockets and for the missiles and to fall down on them. And there are Israeli drones constantly in the skies of Gaza.
Really?
What? Everything in Gaza. Yes, all the time. There's little drones, you know, watching all over Gaza. So Gaza is like a big prison, really. In reality, it's a big prison.
It's an outdoor prison. Ellie, hang on the phone line, okay? Because we got to take our last break here, okay? And I'm Ray Hanania here at the Arab Street Radio and Podcast, broadcast from Detroit, Michigan through 690 AM WNZK Radio. We're on the line with my journalist friend, Ali Younes, who's correspondent for Al Jazeera English. He just returned from the Gaza Strip, where he's done some stories there. And we're going to continue talking with him, but we'll come back right after these messages. And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania, broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan on 690 AM WNZK Radio. I'm talking with journalist Ali Younes, who writes for Al Jazeera English. He's just returned from a trip in the Gaza Strip. Ali, what about, there are two elections coming up. One is the Israeli elections, the third now in a six-month period, I think. Maybe it'll happen in a few months. And then also the role of Arab Israeli citizens. I don't like to call them Arab Israeli. I like to call them Palestinian Israeli citizens. Who have a potential to vote. If they voted to their max, 20%, they could put 24 people in the Knesset. And then also there's talk about a Palestinian election, you know, that Hamas and Abbas have come up, you know, with an agreement to support elections. What do you make of all that, the Israeli elections and the Palestinian elections?
Well, the Israeli elections, you know, obviously everybody knows it's just the third time, but it's, I think, for Netanyahu, it's very important for him to go through the election, because if he doesn't go through this election, he will have to face indictment.
Yes, if he doesn't win, right?
Court.
He believes if he wins, he can prevent the indictments from actually, and he might be able to get, to force the Knesset to give him immunity from the corruption charges.
As a prime minister.
Yes.
If he becomes a prime minister, then he cannot go to court. He cannot be tried for the crimes he had committed under the indictment. But and that's why he doesn't want to go in a unity government with the blue and white coalition under Benny Gantz.
Gantz didn't want Netanyahu. They were going to do a shared, Netanyahu offered a shared government. But he wanted to go first. Yeah, Netanyahu wanted to go first, and Gantz said no. Gantz wanted to go first, knowing that Netanyahu would use his position to protect himself from indictments. He wouldn't just, you know, prevent any conviction or you know, consequences as prime minister. He wanted to change the law to create immunity from prosecution for himself.
Yeah.
That just shows how corrupt he is.
The Likud under Prime Minister Netanyahu got 33 seats, while the blue and white got 34 seats.
Right.
You have to have 61 seats to form a government. So, so all the right wings got short of the got 58. So they need Avigdor Lieberman, another right wing, but who is secular, has 8 seats,
and he's upset with the religious groups, right? His problem is with the religious groups.
He doesn't like the religious groups who are right-wing, who are supporting Netanyahu. He wants secular groups to join Netanyahu as a condition. And he refuses to join the other side, the Israeli, the center-left, because the Arab parties are supporting, who has 13 points, supporting the center-left. So he hates the Arabs, and he says that. I mean, I'm not making that up. He doesn't want to join any party where the Arabs are involved, not even part of the government, but they are involved, or the religious Jews. And he even has makes distinctions. Says, well, the religious Jews, I have political problems with them, but the Arabs, you know, he hates them because they are Arabs. Ethnically, they are Arabs. He hates them. Who have 13 seats. So it's so for this election, under the current polls, it appears we'll have the same equilibrium with the same 34, 33 seats either side. And maybe some parties will lose a seat here, seat there. But Avigdor Lieberman will still be the kingsmaker here. We'll have to either join either side. It depends on how it goes.
Do you think there's any chance that the Palestinian Arab voters will come out to their maximum potential? I mean, it's rare that, you know, 100% of the voters any place, even in the U.S., you sometimes maybe get 40% of the vote. But do you think they'll come out stronger? And do you think that coming out stronger, there's a benefit for the Arab voters, you know, the Palestinian Israeli voters? Is there a benefit for them to increase the number of seats they have in the Knesset? I think there is, but what do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, a 13 seats, they're the third largest, okay? But, you know, and people think that just because you're Arab, you got to vote, you know, with the Arab parties. But, you know, for example, the Druze community in Israel, who are Arabs,
right?
Palestinians, are Druze, you know, Druze Muslims, they vote Likud.
Right.
Okay, they don't vote with the Arab parties.
Yeah, no, they don't. And there are several Arabs in the Knesset who have run on Israeli parties, you know, rather than with Arab parties, right? The Likud is one.
Ayub Kara, who was a former minister under Netanyahu, who was a very right-wing, you know, he's an Arab guy, Druze guy, but he's a very right-wing, pro-Netanyahu politician. He just lost, even he just shoved out of the government. So, and the Bedouin Arabs, the Bedouin Palestinians, also a portion of them vote with like Ahmed Tibi, Hanin Zoabi, like those parties, nationalistic Arab parties, Palestinian, you know, pro-Palestinian Arab parties inside Israel. Some of them vote for those parties, but other votes for the Likud or other parties.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just because I am an Arab, I vote one block with Arab parties.
Right.
So that divides the, when you say 20%, yes, 20%. If they get 20%, if they get 20 seats, and then that said, they will have.
If they could get, I think you're right, if they could even increase it to 15 seats, would be a significant, you know, a significant achievement and statement that says that they can't be ignored. We only have a couple minutes left, Ali. And because you're, you know, being so generous to call into the show and join us, and I appreciate it so much. It's always great talking to you. You and I have known each other for many years as journalists, and I really do look at you as a real journalist, you know, when it comes to the Arab-American community and the Arab world. I think you're a great journalist. What do you think, few minutes that we have, what do you think is the most important issue if we haven't talked about it? What do you think is really important? So I'll give you a moment to say something before we hang up.
I think for this election, I think the Arab Americans, you know, to elect, you know, members of Congress like Marine Newman in Chicago, for example, who support, you know, equitable solution to the Palestinian issue. I think Arab Americans have to put people in Congress who understand their issues, you know, and get united.
He's being challenged by Rush Darwish, and I think that he's going to make it. And he's Palestinian. He's raised a lot of money, but he's not going to get a big vote.
Yeah, and I think I think Palestinian Americans and Arab Americans in general should stand behind Rashida Tlaib, you know, despite, you know, with the differences people might have with or me or you, you know,
have a
voice in Congress. You know, I mean, aside from personal disagreements or personal issues, I think people should look on the bigger issue, more strategic. You know, as opposed to other like Rashida, because, you know, she's this or she's that, she's Palestinian or she's pro this or pro that, or she's outspoken. You know, people should put these personality issues aside and always think strategic.
Yeah.
What's good for the community? That's good for Ali or Ray or Mohammed or whatever.
Well, listen, Ali, I got to interrupt you, and I apologize because we are at the end. We only got a few seconds, but thank you so much for joining us, okay? Ali Younis, Al Jazeera English, taking the time to join us. I appreciate it. Thank you, Ali.
No problem.
All right, buddy. And we'll have this podcast soon. I'm Ray Hanania. Visit our website at hanania.com. Thank you so much, Mike, and everybody in Detroit and around the world for listening. Have a great Christmas. Merry Christmas to all the Arab Christians around the world. Take it easy, buddies. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. We've had a discussion of all the issues facing Arabs in America and the Middle East, from Israel to Palestine, Syria, and more. Visit www.hanania.com to get more information on all of my podcasts and on my award-winning opinion columns.